Hey, I'll take some.
And some Frank's Red Hot.
Nah.
You're just gonna eat these boring nachos with no flavor. Frank it up! Frank it up! This guy finally gets it.
It's the perfect blend of flavor and heat. Frank's Red Hot. I put that on everything.
It seems like everywhere you look right now, someone is sick. This year, prepare your family for airborne invaders with Navage Nasal Care. Navage sucks out viruses, dust, and other airborne particles. All the stuff that gets trapped in your nose, making you miserable. Even better, Navage is HSA, FSA eligible. Navage is available online at Navage.com or Walmart, Walgreens, CVS, and Rite Aid. Navage, N-A-V-A-G-E. Clean nose, healthy life.
This year, wouldn't it be great to stop dealing with thin, brittle, shedding hair and instead have the thick, healthy, gorgeous hair you've always wanted? Now you can by using Hair Volume from New Nordic. Look for Hair Volume at your local Walgreens and CVS or online at Amazon.com or NewNordicUSA.com.
You're listening to WRDN, 1430 AM, Durand, Mondovi, Wabasha, and 107.3 FM at Translator W297CH, Durand.
ABC News, I'm Daria Albinger. It's down to two Republicans on the ballot in tomorrow's New Hampshire primary, former President Trump and former South Carolina governor and former U.N. Ambassador Nikki Haley. First votes at midnight local time in Dixville Notch. The California State University system is operating with limited staff as workers go on strike.
Officially, CSU campuses are open this week, but with professors, counselors, coaches, librarians, and others on strike all week, operations are likely going to be very limited at all 23 campuses. Professors are being told they must tell their students if there will be classes. The striking workers want a pay bump and other benefits.
ABC's Alex Stone. The Pentagon says two U.S. service members were evaluated for traumatic brain injuries after the weekend attack on U.S. troops at an Iraqi airbase. It also says the attack involved 17 ballistic missiles and rockets and was launched from within Iraq. Dexter King, son of civil rights leader Martin Luther King Jr., has died. This is ABC News. Duchess of York Sarah Ferguson has been diagnosed with malignant melanoma. That's an aggressive form of skin cancer. She said on Instagram she got the diagnosis. It was a shock, she says, and she urged others to get regular screenings. Cold weather in northern Mexico prompting officials to relocate a giraffe.
Atop the flatbed trailer is a 16.5-foot-tall enclosure containing Benito the giraffe, who's on a 50-hour trip to the African Safari Park in the state of Puebla, where the climate is much more like that of Benito's native Africa. As for accommodations along the way, Frank Carlos Camacho is director of the park and says Benito has plenty of food and a bed of alfalfa on the floor of his cabin. Once in Puebla, Benito will have room to roam and the company of other giraffes, something he didn't have in Juarez. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
In Roseville, California, a woman's under arrest for allegedly stealing dozens of Stanley cups. She had about 65 of the cups in the trunk of her car. Daria Albinger, ABC News.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try soon. Harry's is available online and in-store at a retailer near you. Get a $13 trial set for just $3 at harrys.com/quality. That's harrys.com/quality. Or check us out at your local Costco for a price you can't find anywhere else. Just look for the Chrome Razor with 13 blade refills at your local Costco. You can't miss it. Exclusive to Costco members.
Wisconsin Radio Network News. I'm Ted Ayla. A Republican bill aimed at restricting abortions in Wisconsin is likely on the fast track for the governor's veto. Tomahawk Republican Senator Mary Felskowski says it will provide voters the opportunity to weigh in on a statewide ballot referendum in April.
We've seen the progress across the nation with states allowing their voters to weigh in on it. And I think it would be a very sad day in the state of Wisconsin if our governor said, no, voters, you don't get to have a voice on this.
Voters are unlikely to get that chance. Governor Tony Evers has said he'll veto the bill, which would put in place a ban on abortions after 14 weeks of pregnancy, except in cases where a mother's life or health would be at risk. The abortion issue is bringing Kamala Harris to Wisconsin. The vice president will mark the anniversary of Roe v. Wade, the abortion ruling overturned by the U.S. Supreme Court in 2022. Her office says Harris will highlight the harm caused by extreme abortion bans and share stories of those who've been impacted in Wisconsin and across the country. She's expected to land in Milwaukee later this morning, then travel to Waukesha County to address the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades District Council 7 in Vernon near Big Bend shortly after noon. The vice president was critical of the bill from Wisconsin Republican lawmakers restricting abortions in the state. A former Madison police officer has been sentenced in an exposure case.
It's a year in prison followed by 5 years extended supervision for a former Madison police officer convicted of exposing himself to a teenage girl. 60-year-old Morris Reed was arrested in 2019 on allegations of assaulting a 15-year-old girl that he took on ride-alongs in his squad years prior. Last October, a jury acquitted Reed on a second-degree sexual assault charge. Reed did resign from the Madison Police Department back in 2013. Rather than face dismissal over a separate incident. In Madison, Robin Colbert, Wisconsin Radio Network.
You wouldn't let a little cold weather or snow interrupt your outdoor cooking experience. No, of course not. You're the master of the pit. No wind or snow or ice is slowing you down. So that's why we at Grandpa's Barbecue salute you. The rich, original flavor of barbecue the way it was meant to be. But you should also know that it works great in a crock pot, too. You didn't hear that from us. Grandpa's Barbecue, available in select stores and online at grandpasbarbecueshop.com.
Here's your Real Country 1430 forecast.
I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot with a look at your weather ahead. Welcome to the wild warm-up. Highs today soar to the mid-30s as we're stuck under mostly cloudy skies. We missed the brunt of the first storm. However, it will bring light shots of snow tomorrow morning with a wintry mix expected by Wednesday. Grandpa's barbecue sauce made in small batches from Grandpa's original recipe. Get yours now at grandpasbbqshop.com. Right now, 33 degrees.
So grains closing mostly higher today, except for Kansas City wheat, trying to put last week's long-term support areas in the rearview mirror. But is the market forming lows? And crude oil puts in a solid performance, helping out the grain sector. Cattle disappoint after a neutral cattle on feed report, while hogs and mix still digging out from the recent storm.
Live! Don't say cookie. Don't say cookie. Don't say cookie. Via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, we begin with a conversation with Alan Brugler from Brugler Marketing. Later, Carrie Artek from ArtekAdvisory.com. And directly following the news, Jack Scoville from the Price Futures Group. I'm a handsome newsman, Davis Michelson. And now, filling in for Chip, welcome Michelle Rook.
Thank you so much, Davis. And
hello.
Good Monday afternoon.
It is a good Monday afternoon, I think.
It is. The weather is fantastic today after being in the deep freeze, like minus 18 the other morning.
Yeah.
I'll take this any day.
Now, you're up. Are you north of the I-90 line where you're at? Or are you on the I-90 line?
I am between, I'm between Brookings and Watertown, if you know that geography, but about 70 miles north of Sioux Falls.
So north. Okay, good. Because we heard from Rochester, Minnesota. The last couple of days, people have really been talking it up that there's kind of a northern tropical Midwestern paradise developing there.
Really?
Does that reach out into your area as well, or are you outside of the northern tropical zone?
Well, yesterday it was again below zero, but today we're up in the upper 20s. And so it feels like balmy outside, I'm telling you, after this weekend.
Did you guys get to have some of that lovely ice that we talked about in this morning's show?
No, we did not get the ice, but we have plenty of ice out on the lake, and we're finally seeing ice fishing.
Hey-o, that's excellent.
Yeah, a lot of people are happy about that, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, who you got for us today?
Well, Ellen Brugler, Brugler Marketing and Management at Omaha, Nebraska, is going to be joining us. Always love visiting with him. He is so knowledgeable about A to Z, so he'll be up with us today as well. But why don't you kick us off with the news, Davis?
Sure thing. Well, winter wheat futures worked to secure a fourth consecutive positive close.
But pressure on hard red wheat broke the streak. Beneficial precipitation, mostly in the form of rain, will occur today through Friday in eastern and southern production areas of the plains. Much of this is expected to miss western Nebraska, northern Colorado, and northwestern Kansas. And that part of the region will continue to need greater moisture for spring, that according to World Weather. USDA reported export inspections of nearly 315,000 metric tons. That's up from the previous week and within the range of expectations. March HRW wheat futures fell 1 cent to 607. March soft red wheat gained 3 1/4 cents to 596.5. March spring wheat closed a nickel higher, $7.25. I don't know how significant technically it is, but it feels like psychologically that close above $7 in the March spring wheat feels like a good sign.
Yeah, and probably a bounce because remember we scored new contract lows last week, and then both KC and Minneapolis wheat, which scored new contract lows Wednesday, scored reversals. So hopefully we're building on that. Maybe we can put those lows behind us.
Well, Michelle, corn futures pivoted around unchanged. That's despite supportive outside markets. World Weather Inc. expects near-term net drying in Argentina, but not enough to trim production potential just yet. As of last Thursday, 4.9% of Brazil's Safrinha corn crop area had been planted. This according to Ag Rural. That's ahead of 1% planted at the same time last year. USDA reported export inspections of 713,000 metric tons. Michelle, that was down from the previous week, but within the pre-report trade of expectations, range of trade expectations. March corn futures firmed 1/4 of 1 cent. To 445.75. May corn also up 1/4 of 1 cent to 456.25. July corn futures closed at 464.75. That's up a whole half cent, Michelle.
Yeah, it seemed like kind of a lackluster day. You had soybeans higher, you had crude oil sharply higher, and corn, boy, we didn't get much of a bounce here. It was a little disappointing overall.
Yep, agreed. Well, soybean oil moved higher with crude oil in today's trade, lending soybean futures a decent lift to open the week. Buyer interest was somewhat limited by pressure on soybean meal and overhead technical resistance. Brazil's soybean harvest advanced to 6% complete as of last Thursday, according to Ag Rural. Meanwhile, World Weather Inc. says most of Brazil will see rain during the next 10 days, with heavy rain possible in some areas. USDA reported export inspections of 1.16 million metric tons. That's actually down from the previous week, but remained within the pre-report range of estimates. March beans gained 11 cents today, 12.24 1/4. May beans firmed a dime to 12.33. July beans closed at 12.41 1/4. That's up 9 1/4 cents today. Talking about those outside markets, your front month February crude oil up $1.60, 75.01 today, Michelle.
Yeah, it looked like soybean oil was trying to follow crude oil. We will see if, you know, soybean oil had a big significant correction here now and can continue to move higher. We'll talk about that with Alan, plus whether we're putting the lows behind us in this market as well.
Awesome. Well, March cotton firmed 88 points today to 84.83. Let's hit these livestock markets quickly. Nearby live cattle faced moderate pressure amid weakening wholesale values. And as traders await last week's average cash cattle price, Friday's cattle on feed report did little to move the market one way or the other. February live cattle slipped 60 cents, 173.77 1/2. March feeders down 67.5 cents to 231.27 1/2, although deferred feeder contracts did manage a positive close. And on the snout side, lower cutout values and a mild rise in the cash market had lean hogs mixed by the end of the day's trade today. Feb hogs 17.5 higher, 70.92 1/2. April down 52.5, 77.62 1/2. Michelle, over to you.
Well, thanks so much, Davis. And we bring in Jack Scoville, Price Futures Group, with our price action for the day. And Jack, we actually ended up here in both soybeans and corn. Are we trying to put lows in the rearview mirror or not?
Well, we're trying. We'll see how successful we are. There's really been very little news, and that's kind of accounted for the sideways price action in through here. And no news is no news. But I kind of like the price action overall. I wish it would get up and get going, but it feels like it's going to take kind of a trigger to kind of get that going. So far, we haven't found that trigger yet.
What is that trigger that you think might do that? What are you looking for?
Well, two things could trigger it. First would be lower than expected crop estimates out of Brazil, which would be somewhere below 150 million tons, I think. And that could happen. I've heard estimates well into the 140s, in fact, and from people I trust. So I think that there is a potential for that to happen. The other thing, of course, would be an uptick in demand, especially from China, for corn or soybeans or both. And China's been buying right along, but still mostly buying from South America. Not, they're buying from here as well, but at reduced rates. And if we can see that pick up, then I think that would be a really good sign, and we would really start picking up.
Yeah. Just quick, cattle seemed a little disappointing considering the neutral cattle on feed report. Was that just the lack of cash or what?
Yeah, I think so. Plus, we're kind of getting past the coldest weather here, so
sure.
A lot of the stress kind of leaving the cattle market as well.
All right. Thanks so much for joining us, Jack Scoville with Price Futures Group. We are going to be back. Alan Brugler, Brugler Marketing, is joining us. Our guest analysis today. We'll be back with more AgriTalk coming up.
Potential. It's the one thing that farmers work tirelessly to reach. Sometimes it takes more than just sweat equity. It takes real financial backing. And whether it's land, equipment, or a little help to make the most of your operation, FBN Finance is the partner for you. At FBN Finance, our farmers' first philosophy means that we have a team of ag experts that looks at each farm and farmer's unique needs, giving you a loan package that fits your goals. And now with FBN Finance, you can get $500 off closing costs for farmland loans over $250,000. With great rates, instant approvals, and a pre-qualification on farmland loans, FBN Finance has everything you need to be your partner in the fields and with your finances. Start your farmland loan today at fbn.com/agritalk or call 833-FBN-LEND. That's 833-FBN-LEND. FBN Finance, more than a lender. Financing offered by FBN Finance, LLC, and its lending partners. Available where FBN Finance, LLC is licensed. Terms and conditions apply. NMLS ID 1631119.
Get a strong start to your sorghum season with Double Team Sorghum. The Double Team Sorghum cropping solution provides superior post-emergent grass control, giving you clean sorghum fields, reliable yields, and improved profitability. Double Team is powered by the proprietary DT trait and uniquely formulated First Act herbicide for a completely integrated and flexible solution for grass control in sorghum. Visit DoubleTeamSorghum.com to learn how to get cleaner fields and bigger yields.
Meet up with the AgMarket.net team in Music City as the company will host its Farming for Profit, Not Price Conference February 4th and 5th. Aside from the AgMarket.net team, Dan Bozzi, Brian Burke, Randy Dowdy, Dave Hightower, Eric Snodgrass, Joe Vaklovic, and Mackenzie Johnson will all be there. Head to AgMarket.net or call 844-4AG and Mark AT to register. There's risk of loss in trading futures under options.
The Wisconsin Corn Growers Association has long worked tirelessly in the interest of today's corn industry. Because you're busy farming and raising a family, so we're at the table when you can't be. But like you, we can't do it alone. Our strength is in our members, our strength is in you. Join us as we continue advocating for the American corn farmer. Visit wicorn.org and become a member today.
Only three companies control 95% of the market for large tractor production. When monopolies capture the market, they take advantage of family farmers and restrict who can repair their equipment. That cuts into farmers' bottom line, and laws must be passed to protect our right to repair. A healthy and vibrant food system is possible, but farmers need the right to repair. And we can't get there without fairness for farmers. Visit fairnessforfarmers.org, paid for by National Farmers Union.
On your favorite radio station or your preferred digital device, AgriTalk is live every weekday.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Michelle Rook in for Chip Glory. Well, always a pleasure to have Alan Brugler, Brugler Marketing, joining us with analysis and commentary today. And Alan, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
I want to start talking about, first of all, obviously the big question after the January report and kind of the action that we had last week was, you know, we held some long-term support areas in corn and in soybeans. And now that we've got our hangover maybe behind us in terms of the January reports, are those long-term lows going to hold? Are we trying to put in bottoms in both corn and soybeans?
I think we're trying to put in bottoms in both. You've got, again, very oversold technical conditions. One of the things I'm watching pretty closely, there's a 100-month moving average on the corn. That's at 456. We've been below it. Obviously, we got into the 440s last week. But this is a monthly chart, and it's not a breakout to the downside unless you are still there at the end of the month. So I think we've got a few days here to push it around and see if we get some short covering into month end. You know, asset allocators who've made money by being short all month may do a little buying into month end. The other thing I've noticed is open interest has been going up quite a bit in corn. That tells me there's some corn moving in the country, and that's been one of the limiting factors. There hasn't been any sell paper for the funds to buy against, and if that's starting to change, then it's a different dynamic for the market technically.
I've had some people say, though, open interest going up in corn means that we have new selling, new funds selling. Is that true as well?
Well, by definition, if you've got an increase in open interest, you have a new buyer and a new seller. The way we gauge that is what happened to the price while those things were happening. So, for example, if open interest is up 10,000 contracts today, but the market's up 3, we'd assume that the buyers were more interested in getting in than the sellers were in selling. That's net new buying. But conversely, if open interest is up 10,000, but the market's down a couple cents, that's probably hedge pressure and net new selling. The funds didn't want to be in very badly.
Yeah. The funds now short, according to the commitment of traders report, what, 260,000 plus contracts. They increased that as of last Tuesday. That's not a record short. So how much shorter will they go in this market, do you think?
As you point out, it's not a record short. Bill Cosby had a routine back in the day. Don't ever challenge worse. It was a... about losing money at the casinos in Las Vegas, but it's similar to the ag markets. Okay, if it can always get worse, wheat's a poster child for that. You know, it just keeps going down and down and down until it's 99.9% oversold. You know, so it certainly could get worse. But you know, we're at a level that has held the corn market for 4 or 5 months now, that 455, 456 area for front month futures. You know, dropping into the 440s basically told the Chinese or anybody else who needed to buy corn, Mexico perhaps, hey, it's on sale today. This is a good time to pick up a little bit more. I think the same thing happened in beans. You did see the China buy some that got announced under the daily reporting system last week. Beans just got cheap enough finally to be of interest to them.
Yeah, I want to ask you about that soybean sale to China last week, almost 11 million bushels. And it was kind of surprising because Brazil's soybean prices are so much cheaper than the United States. What did you make of that sale?
I think it's mostly logistics. They've got to hedge their bets a little bit on where you get the stuff from. You can't get rely 100% on shipments out of Brazil just because of the volumes that they're doing. I thought it was interesting that and right now, of course, is a low spot in Brazilian availability. Yes, the price quotes are down, but that's mostly for deferred shipment as the new crop comes out of the field. We know they've only harvested 4 or 5% of their beans so far. Actually, a lot of the beans are still in vegetative or pod, you know, flowering and pod set. People forget that because you see the harvesting videos, but a lot of the crop is not mature yet. I did notice that China's statistics put out their final numbers for last year, and out of the 99 million tons they imported, 69 million came from Brazil.
Yeah, and the U.S. actually, our share went down, did it not?
Yeah, our market share went down. It was only 24 million tons. So that's what you're going to get when Brazil has a record crop. This year, Brazil's crop's going to be down, obviously, but Argentina's could potentially be more than double last year's drought-depressed production and offset a lot of the Brazilian losses.
Yeah, no doubt. So fund position in the soybean market, they've actually pushed shorter now, almost 77,000 contracts short in that market. Do they keep pushing short, or did last week's reversals kind of change that, you think?
I think it's too early to tell. The market's trying to stabilize here. You really don't have a compelling reason to go down other than, trying to find support. Technically, we've got some pretty good support on the March at 1205 3/4. That's 78% Fibonacci retracement, 78.6%. Stochastics are trying to give you a buy signal there. So it's a plausible place to stop and bounce. Again, the funds are going to take positions based on where the liquidity is and where the story is. If you get a big move going in bean oil, that'll help. If you stop the erosion or slow down the erosion of meal, that'll help.
But that isn't likely with Argentina coming on with such a big crop, right?
Yeah, the meal's going to be the problem all year, I think. Not saying we have to continue to go down all year, but the problem is we're adding crush capacity because we want the veg oil. And, we put two new plants online back in November. You got, I think, 11 more that are under construction for completion sometime between now and the end of 2026. You're going to be creating a lot of meal that isn't necessarily needed in the United States. Argentina, in shorter term, yeah, Argentina was running low on beans, but the new president there, Milei, changed the tax structure a little bit and is pushing really hard to get exports of both beans and products because he needs U.S. dollars.
I'm glad you brought up bean oil because I've been curious. We had this sell-off like the last quarter of 2023 in that bean oil market drop below 50 cents, which has been surprising with what you just said about the crush, record crush, and the fact that we have more processing coming online. What happened end of year, and now are we starting to see things turn around?
Well, today at least it looked like that. I think... there's several things going on in bean oil. You got the inclusion rate dropped. We were actually using less bean oil for renewable biodiesel production. You're seeing a little more yellow grease. You were seeing some more corn oil, some other alternative stocks, because at 72 cents, bean oil was expensive. Palm oil's gotten more expensive recently. That's helped. The story today was that Phillips 66 has a big renewable diesel refinery coming online out in Rodeo, California, and they got some environmental approvals that they needed to get that thing ramped up and online. So, that's that they're set up apparently to use bean oil primarily. So that got the bean oil market excited when those approvals news hit.
Bean oil is lagging, though, compared to palm oil. So when will bean oil start to catch up to palm oil prices, or will it?
Well, it's going to depend on that industrial use. We're out of the export market for bean oil for all intents and purposes. These renewable diesel plants can outbid any exporter for bean oil. So you're going to keep almost all the bean oil at home. It is somewhat... the demand's somewhat contingent on the subsidy levels, the CARB credits out of California and so forth. But, I think you'll see as bean oil stocks get tighter and you get, some more processing demand online. And perhaps if you get a little rally in crude or diesel seasonally after February, that'll tend to boost the consumption too.
Well, these bean oil values look to be at a value to me if you're a processor.
Yeah, well, 44 cents is your chart support. We pop back up over 48 today. But, we're at a reasonable place to bottom, just as we've talked about with the corn and the beans. And it's just, can you actually tip the snowball the other way? Can you get the funds starting to want to get out of those short positions? Can you get the end users to start committing to more longs and be accompanied by spec buying.
Yeah. And this may be a question that we're going to have to start and then end after the break, but China's economy faltering, is that also weighing on the meal market?
It is, although I'd argue it's not specifically the Chinese economy. It's the hog herd liquidation in particular.
Okay.
They had that's somewhat tied to the economy, but it's also tied to they just overexpanded for what the consumption was. But the point is, with the fewer hogs, you don't need as much meal or as much imported corn either.
Well, it's been interesting. There's a little disconnect there when you see China still buying corn. And when you look at the import levels that they had for 2023 versus the fact that they say they have this huge crop in their country. Why do they need all these?
Everything. New traits, existing soil insecticides. Every corn grower knows the hassle of gooseneck corn. But now there's Narisma Insecticide from BASF, a better, stronger in-furrow insecticide that controls corn rootworm and below-ground pests. Stand up for your corn with Narisma Insecticide. Ask your authorized BASF retailer about Narisma. And always read and follow label directions.
Retirement can be scary, but only if you're not prepared. That's why AARP created thisispretirement.org. Because unless you've already retired, you're in pretirement and you still have time to plan. Learn about retirement savings options, potential tax breaks, and how you can build savings over time. Visit thisispretirement.org for free resources to help you customize your action plan and feel the retirement fear disappear. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Let's go to the markets page at ProFarmer.com and check today's closes, where March hard red winter wheat futures fell 1 cent to 607. March soft red wheat gained 3¼ cents to 596½. March corn futures firmed 0.25 cents to 445¾. May corn also up 0.25 cents, 456¼ at the close. March soybean futures gained 11 cents to 12.24¼. May beans firmed a dime, 12.33 at the close. March cotton firmed 88 points today to 84.83. On your livestock, February fat cattle slipped 60 cents to 173.77½. March feeder futures fell 67½ cents to 231.27½. February lean hog futures 17½ higher, 17.92½. Get more market news every market day. Try ProFarmer.com.
What's in a name? Well, if it's OptiCare, you can expect optimum animal health, optimum performance, and optimum care for your livestock. OptiCare is a complete line of beef, swine, dairy, and specialty products, each designed to treat or prevent common animal health problems, enhance growth, and improve performance. OptiCare, their name says it all. See Jerry Bear and Sons of Arkansas for a complete line of OptiCare products, Hubbard Feeds Incorporated products, and the answers that work.
Join Security Financial Bank for the 4th Annual Chippewa Valley Agriculture Conference, February 22nd at Florian Gardens in Eau Claire. Come gather strategies developed specifically for local agriculture producers, from knowing your numbers to application drones. The Chippewa Valley Agriculture Conference has something for everyone. Call 715-672-2412 or visit sfbank.com for more information. SFB, an equal housing lender, member FDIC.
Looking to upgrade the home appliances? Alcivia Co-op Heating and Cooling features gas and electric ranges, refrigerators, freezers, washers, and dryers from General Electric and Speed Queen. If you need an appliance repair, Alcivia Co-op Heating and Cooling can service all major appliances. Call Alcivia Co-op and ask for Jody Feedy. She'll help you with all of your home appliance needs. Alcivia Co-op, your GE and Speed Queen appliance dealer, Durand.
Here's your Real Country 1430 forecast.
I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot with a look at your weather ahead. Welcome to the wild warm-up. Highs today soar to the mid-30s as we're stuck under mostly cloudy skies. We missed the brunt of the first storm. However, it will bring light shots of snow tomorrow morning with a wintry mix expected by Wednesday. Grandpa's barbecue sauce made in small batches from Grandpa's original recipe. Get yours now at grandpasbbqshop.com. Right now, 33 degrees.
Council.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. When news breaks, the newsmakers talk about it on AgriTalk with Chip Flory.
Well, I heard he needed some help.
Well, welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm in for Chip Flory today. I'm Michelle Rook. Joining us, Alan Brugler with Brugler Marketing. And before the break, kind of the theme that we had going on, Alan, was talking about whether the lows were behind us in both corn and soybeans. And I guess the same question is in the back of my mind about wheat. So we had new contract lows in both Kansas City and Minneapolis wheat last week. And then Thursday kind of scored some reversals. You know, is that market putting the lows in the rearview mirror there too or not?
I'm always cautious to call low in wheat. Many have died trying to put one in here. And today's action, you know, Minneapolis is still trying to get back to $7 here. And had a little positive action today, but again, not enough of a rally to really tell us anything. I think if you're looking at that March contract for Minneapolis, the 40-day average is up around 716. That's a bigger number to me, a more important number. If we can take that out, I think you got a little more, from a technical standpoint, a little more reason for a rally. Fundamentally, the thing that's most disturbing is USDA showed us less winter wheat acreage than expected.
Right.
And the market didn't really react to that. It didn't say, oh, wow, we got to bid up this stuff now. It was kind of like, well, tell me something exciting.
Yeah, but is that because the idea, or I guess maybe the thought process of the market is that winter wheat conditions are much better than a year ago and we're going to make up for that with better yields?
That's probably in the background somewhere. I think, yes, conditions were better going into dormancy. You know, there was a little talk about winter kill with the 20 below zero temps and so forth. But if you look at the maps, most of the crop should have been under snow cover when it was affected by those kind of temperatures. The bigger problem, I think, is just the global environment right now. You know, Russia's pretty much pricing wheat to sell. They got most of that last Egyptian tender again. It looked for a while like they were trying to walk prices higher. Now that it looks like they're more trying to keep them stable. You know, you get Russia out of the market, that would help create more opportunities for the U.S. I think the Russians have had some weather issues with really, really, really cold temperatures in some of those growing areas. But again, we don't have particularly good data on snow cover and won't know till spring on green up how much damage was done. The bullish story to me on wheat is simply that the world stocks usage ratio, based on what WASDE told us last week or a week and a half ago, is supposed to be the tightest since 2007-08 by the time we get to the end of May. And that would argue for prices this high or higher, at least. You know, you have to remember that we got conditioned by those $13 prices in 2022 to think things should be higher indefinitely. But I think my point is that the world production is focused mostly in the Northern Hemisphere for wheat. Okay, it's Canada, it's U.S., it's your EU, it's Russia. And there's much smaller production south of the equator. So the peak supply for the entire world is in that July, August, September period, and then kind of goes down from there. And as we get closer to those tight stocks usage ratios that USDA is seeing for year end, I think the U.S. will be in a position to benefit more than we have so far.
Yeah. Well, demand has been a bit of an issue for wheat. It's been an issue for soybeans. Corn's been getting a little bit better on the export front. But is it really just a lack of demand, or is this shipping and logistic issues, or is it a combination?
Well, the shipping is not helping anything, that's for sure. Particularly, the U.S. is suffering probably the most from that simply because of the Panama Canal. Okay, if you look at our main buyers, and you know, whether that's Japan or South Korea or Taiwan or China, they're all right now very dependent on the PNW, and we only have limited shipping capacity out of the PNW. Normally, we'd run stuff out of the Gulf. You know, we have a nice cheap river system to get grain down to the Gulf, then we'd send it through the Panama Canal. Panama Canal shipping is way, way down, and
right,
it's extremely expensive for the U.S. for a grain shipper to pay the auction premiums to run grain through there when an LNG tanker can afford it a lot better. So, yeah, I think you're seeing some discounts in the FOB prices, and that's being passed back upriver just because of freight.
You bet. Okay, so bigger picture, stock market, S&P making new highs. Talk about what this means for money flow and what it's been meaning in terms of, you know, the lack of, I guess, interest for the funds to really want to own commodities.
Well, you know, there's a certain amount of hot money, and it's got a $1 trillion figure on it, I think, that is going where things are moving. Okay, and it would in general rather be long something than short something. Not everybody understands that you can make money on the short side. You know, if you're talking about the overall investing community. So if the stock market's making new highs or at least coming up on new highs, there's a lot of interest in putting any discretionary money there rather than in a commodity that the funds are already short and that's leaking lower. And that's been the case for a lot of the ags. So, you know, you've been sucking money away from commodities towards the equities, I think. Back in November, December, we were getting more interest in bonds and interest rate instruments. That kind of backed off because it looked like the Fed rate cuts, if any, are going to be later in the year than what people were hoping. But again, the money, it's been attractive to put money into equities. You had huge percentage gains for the year in your 401k or your IRA or whatever you had invested. The other part of that equation is inflation has slowed down. You know, when inflation's running up, then people tend to want to own commodities. They tend to, right, to keep up with inflation.
Is the market getting ahead of itself on these interest rate cuts?
Well, I think it definitely did. You were pricing in the first Fed rate cut in March. In my opinion, that was never going to happen, but you could see that in the spreads and in the Treasury futures. What you've got now is kind of backtracking and saying, well, certain parts of the inflation haven't slowed down as much as expected, notably the service economy. You still got quite a bit of money floating around out there. The thing that you also have to remember is some of the big wage deals like the United Auto Workers, those are not fully in place. You know, those are multi-year deals. They've got a little wage inflation built into them. And so it's going to be a little harder to kill it off, I think, than some people anticipated. Goods and services, are that situation's improved. You do have, food and energy are excluded from the inflation indicators the Fed looks at because they're so volatile. But obviously, you know, if crude's ramping up because of the Mideast situation, that's inflationary pressure. It's not going to be something the Fed is probably going to react to, but it's still there.
Yeah, maybe that'll bring a little money back into the commodity sector, maybe.
And it's a variable you have to keep an eye on.
Right. Okay, cattle market. Let's talk about that one. Cattle on feed report was pretty neutral, 102 on feed. The placement number was down about 4.5%, right in line with the trade guesses. But yet, I don't know, I didn't think we had the best response to the market in the market today. So was that because of the lack of cash news or profit taking? What was going on there today?
Well, you had an initial attempt to push it lower on this morning. I think, I'm looking at an April chart here. It sold off and then came back later in the day. So you end up with a little bit of a hanging man candlestick there. But the issue with cattle is pretty much the same one we've been dealing with for a while. We know we're downsizing the herd. The heifer data, the heifers on feed data actually showed a slightly lower percentage of heifers in the feedlot mix than we had in the last quarterly report. But that's because we ended up with a few more steers in there. I think there's no question that the feeder numbers are still dropping pretty sharply. We know that the calf crop at the end of the month, when USDA does their cattle inventory, that's going to be down. You know, so the long-term bull story is still there of downsizing the herd and having scarcer number of calves and feeders. We kind of got ahead of ourselves in 2023. Because we didn't anticipate as many heifers going into the feedlot as we got, thereby supplementing the supply. That won't be the case in 24, I don't think. So that said, it's hard to duplicate the kind of bull market we had in 2023, where the funds just come in and put the pedal to the metal and you run it up 40 or 50 bucks. I think you'll get an echo rally here, but I at this point still have doubts we can get all the way back to last year's highs, even though the cattle cycle is still tightening.
That heifer data that you talk about in the report actually does confirm that we're not really retaining heifers and putting them back in to rebuild the herd, though, doesn't it?
That's correct. We're still downsizing, and you're going to, and actually cow slaughter, while it slowed down a little bit, was still our second or third largest. So that also argues towards the herd being smaller in that cattle inventory report. Again, cattle cycle is still in the down phase. It's still in the liquidation phase. That means tighter numbers to come. But we know that cattle cycle has been going on for 200 right. years, and it's not, while you'd think conceptually the beef price, the live cattle price would be highest after the lowest feeder numbers. That's not always the case. The market anticipates.
Yeah, and hopefully weights will start coming down here as well. That would certainly help the market out. All right, Alan, a pleasure to have you. Thanks so much.
My pleasure. Talk to you next time.
You bet. Alan Brugler with Brugler Marketing. We will be back with some chart action with Carrie Artek coming up on AgriTalk.
Take steps to live a more sustainable lifestyle by investing in plastic-free food storage containers like silicone sandwich bags or beeswax wraps, which can replace the difficult-to-recycle single-use plastic wrap. And while we all do our part, Charmin is working hard to make a difference by regrowing 2 trees for every tree used. We all go, why not enjoy the go with Charmin? Whether it's the irresistible cushiony softness of Charmin Ultra Soft or the superior strength and absorbency of Charmin Ultra Strong, either way, you can't go wrong.
KFC's wraps are still just 2 for $5. Just think about that. 2 wraps, just $5. You want a new spicy mac and cheese wrap and a new honey barbecue chicken wrap for lunch? Just $5. You want a new mac and cheese wrap and a spicy slaw wrap as a snack? Just $5. You want 2 classic KFC wraps just because? Just $5. KFC wraps are back for a limited time. Now with 3 new options. Choose 2 for just $5. It's finger licking good. Prices and participation may vary. Prices higher in Alaska, Hawaii, and third-party ordering websites. Tax, tip, and fees extra.
You took the first step and quit smoking, but even former smokers may still be at risk for lung cancer. That's why SaveByTheScan.org wants you to know about a new low-dose CT scan that can detect lung cancer early. It takes only 60 seconds and could save your life. You took the first step, now take the next. Visit SaveByTheScan.org for a simple quiz to see if you're eligible and talk to your doctor about screening. SaveByTheScan.org is brought to you by the American Lung Association's Lung Force Initiative and the Ad Council.
Meet Cheryl.
Hey.
She's on vacation and lost in the moment. Unfortunately, so is her Chase debit card.
It's got to be somewhere.
Maybe she lost it at salsa night.
These skirts should have pockets.
Or maybe she lost it at Pilates.
3 and 2 and...
But she's not worried. With the Chase mobile app, she can lock her card till it turns up. Tools that help protect. One bank that puts you in control. Visit chase.com/checking. Chase, make more of what's yours.
Chase mobile app is available for select mobile devices. Message and data rates may apply. JPMorgan Chase Bank, N.A. member FDIC.
As farmers gear up for the 2024 season, many are watching interest rates and looking for the best financing options. Here to talk about how FBN Finance is helping farmers secure a personalized land loan is TJ Wilson, Director of Finance Sales. TJ, rates have been volatile for some time now. What does the current market look like, and how does FBN Finance help farmers with their land financing?
Thanks for having me. You know, rates have been very volatile, but luckily, we've seen a nice drop of about 1% in interest rates over the last couple months on most of our products across the board. So the Federal Reserve has hinted that there could be some further rate reductions over the next year and a half, which is a great time to review your loan and see if it makes sense to start laying the groundwork for a refinance now or go ahead and get that process going for you.
Okay, so how does someone decide which loan term is best for them?
Yeah, so at FBN Finance here, we are focused on working with family farmers, and we try to take a very unique approach to each farmer's operation. Our team has an average experience of 15 years in the space and really understands what these farmers are going through. Most of our team is in the industry themselves and are producers, so we really try to look at it from their perspective to understand what the best terms are for them.
Okay, what's the best way for someone to get in contact with that experienced team?
You can get started by going to fbn.com/agritalk or call directly at 833-FBN-LEND. That's L-E-N-D. Right now, AgriTalk listeners, when you fill out the form, speak with a loan advisor, or call directly and mention AgriTalk, you're eligible to save $500 on your closing costs for your next land loan over $250,000.
Excellent. Thank you, TJ. That is TJ Wilson, Director of Finance Sales at FBN. Again, go to fbn.com/agritalk or call 833-FBN-LEND and be sure to mention AgriTalk.
This is Andrew McRae, host of The American Countryside. I'm also a farmer and rancher from Northwest Missouri, and I hope you'll join me each week for Farming the Countryside as we take a look at the top issues impacting agriculture as told by the people farming and working in our industry. We'll talk about markets and trade, share some of the latest tips and trends from grain and livestock producers, and take a look at trends impacting rural America. Join me for Farming the Countryside on many local radio stations or on your favorite podcast platform, or just go to farmingthecountryside.com.
I'm Ty Morgan, host of U.S. Farm Report, the only weekend television show that features some of agriculture's biggest names. From custom commentary from John Phipps to the stories of antique iron with Machinery Pete to a list of more than 30 marketing analysts, our weekly program focuses on the topics that matter most to you. We invite you to join us each weekend for U.S. Farm Report, timely, trusted tradition.
I don't know what you're thinking. So call us at 855-4-TALK-AG and tell us what's on your mind.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Michelle Rook in for vacationing Chip Florian, a much needed and deserved vacation at that. Well, it's the time of day and the day that we talked to Kerry Artek with Artek Advisory. He's joining us with chart perspective, and we've been talking a lot about charts here today. Kerry, what charts are you going to be analyzing for us today?
Thanks, Michelle. I'm going to start with March corn. 3 weeks ago, we settled below a significant floor of support that is now above the market at 460.25. We're trading around 445 and three quarter last. 460.25 is our ceiling into spring, and below which we are in the midst of a 2 to 3 month sell signal, expecting 412 and a quarter over that time horizon. Now, on the way down over the last couple of weeks, the market has been bottoming out at a nearer term channel bottom that this week is at 435.75. And given the fact that we've tested this area, last week it was around 437, given the fact that we've been testing this area for the last couple of weeks, we can rally back to 416 a quarter, possibly, over the next 2 or 3 weeks, where the market can top out into spring. And as I say, 412 and a quarter remains a 2 to 3 month downside target. Now, downside this week, if we do settle the week Friday below 435.75, I would expect that targeted 412 and a quarter within about 2 to 3 weeks, where we can bottom out into spring trade. And at that point, we'll just see how the fundamentals play out with respect to crop conditions, et cetera, et cetera. Upside, if we settle back above 416 a quarter at the end of the week, which I don't expect this week, but if we did over the next couple of weeks, I see about a 2 to 3 week rally to 489.5. And that is a level that can contain monthly buying pressures. And 489.5 is our aggressive upward pivot point as we move through February and into March. If over the next 3 to 5 weeks, let's say we can close above 489.5, then I'm expecting 525 even within probably 2 to 3 months, where we could top out actually into summer activity. But for right now, heavy below 416 a quarter, expecting 412 and a quarter over the next 2 to 3 months. On to lean hogs. We are rolling this week from February to April. There's a big difference in price between the February and April contract. 70 handle in the February contract, 77 handle in April. April finds meaningful resistance presently at 78 and a quarter. 78 and a quarter can contain buying in the April contract through February. And over the next 2 to 3 months, the April contract can fall back to 73 and a quarter, where it can bottom out into expiration. But if we can close the week Friday in the April lean hogs above 78 and a quarter, I see that as a meaningful sign of strength as we move through February, then expecting 82.75 within about 3 to 5 weeks. At 82.75, the April contract can top out into expiration and is also a significant upward pivot point into summer trade if we can close above 82.75. But first, we've got to close above 78.25. That is a big pivot point for the lean hog market as we move through the rest of winter, below which 73.25 likely over the next 2 to 3 months. And if once again, if we can close above 78.25 on Friday, 82.75 likely by the end of February. And finally, I thought I would talk about the March S&P, I'm sorry, the S&P 500 index itself. This is the index, and you know how the stock market can impact the broader commodity of futures markets. I do have a significant ceiling of resistance that I've been expecting now for the last several months at 49.02. That is a 16-month rising channel top. We're presently trading around 48.50 last in the S&P 500 index. 49.02 is likely over the next week or two at the most. At 49.02, and this is a rising channel top, so it's a little higher next week, we can top out through the second quarter and from 49.02 fall all the way back into the 4,500 handle over the following 3 to 5 months. But if we can close the week Friday above 49.02, then we've got a significant show of strength as we move into later year. I would expect over the following 5 to 8 months, 58.64 and rising. That is a four-year rising channel top that I think is a realistic objective in the third, fourth quarter of this year if the S&P 500 index can settle the week above 49.02. Until then, we are getting into overbought territory. We're just below 49.02. And from here, this market can, I'm not expecting a significant accelerated sell-off, but we can rotate south here over the next 3 to 5 months back into the 4,500 area. And that's all I've got this week, Michelle. Thanks much.
Hey, thanks so much. It's been an impressive run there in the S&P 500 index. Thanks for sharing that. Carrie Artek, Artek Advisory, again joining us with today's chart perspective.
Yeah. Just checking in with that. The outside markets there have been a big topic of conversation. Still up $1.60, 75.01 in that February WTI. From there, we're, you know, call it $70.50 up. Just shy of $1.50 on the day. But yeah, the stock indices, the Dow up 138, the S&P 500 up 14.25, NASDAQ up 32 points at 17,470.5. It's an impressive run in the stock market going on right now. It'd be nice to see some of that money come over into commodities. I'm not sure what that catalyst is, Michelle.
Well, as you heard Alan talk about, money is being basically pulled over into what's performing the best. And so until we start seeing some inflationary fears coming back into the marketplace, you probably won't see commodities as the hot buy. Usually grains, especially, the fund traders buy as a hedge against inflation. And so that's why we've been seeing kind of this exodus of money away from especially the grain sector here in the ags the last almost 18 months now.
Well, and we've been critical about the Fed and how they seem to telegraph their passes. You know what I mean? They tell us, oh, well, we're looking ahead to maybe 3 to 4 rate cuts or whatever that number might be. We've argued that what the market really needs is a good shocker. You know, don't be telegraphing this stuff to us. Let's give the market, you know, it's due. And then maybe we can correct appropriately in response. I don't know.
Yeah,
pipe dreams.
I kind of felt like just rip the Band-Aid off and get it done.
Yes,
you know.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Real quick, National Weather Service, if I can just bust in right quick. 6 to 10 day temperature outlook. Above normal temperatures expected. The hottest temperatures. Looks like in a line, there's a little bubble that extends right down to Rochester, Minnesota. And up from there, pretty much everybody except for the southern tip of Florida expected above normal temperatures. Below normal precip in the 6 to 10 days. Similar deal, above normal temperatures, but we do get more precip heading clear from California out to Illinois in the 8 to 14 day. Michelle Rook, over to you.
Yeah, thanks so much. Tomorrow morning, joining us for AgriTalk, Ethan Lane, NCBA, Bill Levin, National Port Board, and Kurt Kavorik with Clean Fuels America will be joining us. And tomorrow afternoon, we'll have Dave Chatterton with Strategic Farm Marketing. Thanks for joining us here for AgriTalk.
I taught for 20 years until I started forgetting my lectures.
Eventually, he had to quit. Getting his early Alzheimer's diagnosis was hard, but it gave us time to take control of the situation together.
I can't imagine going through this without him.
If you or your family are noticing changes, it could be Alzheimer's. Talk about seeing a doctor together. For more information, visit alz.org/timetotalk. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
Retirement can be scary, but only if you're not prepared. That's why AARP created thisispretirement.org. Because unless you've already retired, you're in pretirement and you still have time to plan. Learn about retirement savings options, potential tax breaks, and how you can build savings over time. Visit thisispretirement.org for free resources to help you customize your action plan and feel the retirement fear disappear. Brought to you.
You took the first step and quit smoking. But even former smokers may still be at risk for lung cancer. That's why SaveByTheScan.org wants you to know about a new low-dose CT scan that can detect lung cancer early. It takes only 60 seconds and could save your life. You took the first step, now take the next. Visit SaveByTheScan.org for a simple quiz to see if you're eligible and talk to your doctor about screening. SaveByTheScan.org is brought to you by the American Lung Association's Lung Force Initiative.